Well, it's the sixth and final episode of Plant Power. And today, myself, Sarah, and Megan are going to talk about practical applications from the conversations we've had with our experts over the last few weeks. At the end of the episode, practitioner Dave Hogsett will also include his clinical insights, and then that'll be a wrap on this season of the Holistic Matters podcast series. Let's get started. All right, well, welcome to the sixth and final episode of this series. Over the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about everything from organic and sustainable farming, bioavailability and bioaccessibility of nutrients, what it means when we say the whole food matrix or a whole food advantage, and talking about the relationship between phytonutrients and color and what those colors of food mean for how we can apply healthy eating practices in our lives. This kind of thing is really important for everyone from the practitioner to the patient. So everyone's going to make healthy choices in their life, and everyone can use a little bit of a realistic conversation about how we can apply all of the concepts that we've talked about in the past couple of weeks. So I'm here with Megan and Sarah to talk about how to realistically apply the concepts that we've talked about. I just wanted to start off, Megan and Sarah, by asking both of you how the average person can realistically adopt a lifestyle that includes ample colors from plant-based food.
It seems like an easy concept, right? So have colors, you know, thinking about your breakfast, you know, how many colors were on your plate and lunch and dinner and snacks and whatnot. And oftentimes when I'm working with different patients too, they kind of seem to have more monochromatic colors on their plate. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. But of course, we're always looking to see how we can get more variety of those colors on someone's plate. But it also is going to depend on so many different factors, from, you know, their lifestyle, their economic status, to where they live, what's available seasonality wise. But we're always looking to get more variety and more color in each and every day through a variety of different fruits and vegetables. And even when you're thinking about whole grains, we can even throw those into the plate. So I think there's, of course, much research and much desire to have a lot of colors of food, but it also depends a lot on, you know, where that you live, you know, what you can afford, what you have available seasonality wise. So there's a lot of different factors. And of course, preference and taste also play a role. A lot of people don't particularly love, you know, certain colors of fruits and vegetables because they may or may not know how to prepare them or have not had them before. And of course, it's going to take plenty of trial and error in order for you to learn to like something new, especially as an adult. But it's definitely worth it. And I think the more colors of food you can consume, obviously, we know you will have a better outcome.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the other things we should think about when we're thinking about colors is that, you know, try new things. You might not like it the first time, but our taste buds adapt. And, you know, if you have things multiple times, you become more apt to like them. You know, it's kind of interesting. I think back to my son, like when he was a little kid and like I'm feeding him and he would continue to eat whatever I put in him. And then at some point he realized like, I don't like that. And then there's this whole stage of, I don't like that. You know, everything is terrible. But now as a teenager, because we make him eat things over and over, he develops a taste for them. And that can happen with adults too. So maybe make a goal of adding one new vegetable or fruit that you haven't consumed a month. Like, there's so many different opportunities to eat unique foods because we have such an open system now, where 100 years ago or even 50 years ago, you couldn't get strawberries or you couldn't get jackfruit as like something kind of weird and out there that maybe you haven't tried. So there's a lot of opportunities to add new foods. And even like within like a carrot, there's many varietals that you could try a purple carrot. Maybe you're not used to eating purple carrots, but you know, purple carrots are really exciting and they taste different than probably the baby carrots that have been processed that aren't really actually baby carrots. They've just been cut that way. So make a goal for yourself to try one new vegetable a month.
So we talked a little bit about taste preference. That's obviously a huge challenge that a lot of people are going to have, especially those that aren't used to eating a lot of fruits and vegetables. And we talked with Christine Mason in our episode about organic farming about the conception that organic produce costs more, and a lot of times it does cost more. And there's, you know, a few nuances involved in that. But in addition, what kinds of challenges do people face when they're trying to incorporate new, maybe healthier, or at least more diverse fruits and vegetables into their diet?
Well, I know in our house, waste is always the top priority. I think we're always trying to overcome. So, you know, we go out for your grocery haul from the beginning of the week, and you want to make sure produce stays as fresh as possible, but you want it to last long. So I know some considerations in many households is what to do with it and how quickly to do with that produce, for example. So I would encourage people to you know, still continue to buy the good produce, you know, whether it is organic or not, but, you know, look into different options like freezing your produce to kind of last it longer throughout the week, because there's nothing I hate more than throwing moldy berries away that haven't been used, for example. So, you know, I think, you know, figuring out a game plan, as much as people probably hate the term meal planning, but just kind of an idea of, you know, realistically what you plan to use throughout the week. So you can prioritize your purchases for consumption, because I think, you know, at the end of the day, we all are going to have that conscious mindset of, you know, realistic practicality. But I think also, you know, it's just the way of life. Sometimes, you know, that bag of salad does get tossed by the end of the week because you didn't have a good plan of how to use it. So I think it's just, it's many different considerations all put into one.
Yeah, I agree. I think meal planning is really important. One thing that we've done for years is we belong to a CSA, so community supported agriculture. And so it gives you kind of like a opportunity to try new things that maybe you aren't and really be forced to use those vegetables, freezing and things of that nature. You know, I've been an avid composter too, so you don't feel so guilty when you throw away those things. And we just moved to a new house and I didn't move my composter, but I have started this compost service where you put the bucket and then they're going to bring you compost. And so I think that kind of fits to what Christine was talking about in our previous episode about how important composting is to value. And so then you don't feel so guilty about throwing away that bag of salad because you're not actually putting it in the landfill. It's going to go to a good source to improve the soil.
I am thinking back to something, Megan, you said, I think in our episode on phytonutrients and the color of food about having just adding one additional vegetable or one serving a day is going to make a difference. So if something like composting is overwhelming to you, or buying organic, you're just not ready for it or something like that, I think the sentiment of taking baby steps to get to where you're maybe living a healthier lifestyle by eating, you know, maybe 5 times more vegetables and fruits than you used to is still helpful. So there shouldn't be this pressure to be living the perfect healthy lifestyle right away, especially for someone who's maybe not spent a lot of time cooking before, really thinking about what they eat. And so that's good news, right? That you can make a difference for your health just by making one small positive change toward eating more plant-based food.
Right. I have to, you know, give the anecdote that, you know, a lot of times we are still under consuming fiber in this country. So yeah, if you went out and started having 10 servings of fruits and vegetables each day, your fiber intake is going to be more in line with what you should be consuming, but that'll also come with some probably uncomfortable digestive issues afterwards if you're not used to eating any fruits and vegetables. So yeah, just one really makes a difference, and you can kind of build up upon that. You know, you can gradually increase, you can gradually find what you like to do and how you like to eat certain fruits and vegetables. But I don't think it's realistic for anyone to go out and, you know, go cold turkey, if you would, on, you know, consuming a completely plant-based diet or just, you know, consuming 10 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. I mean, it definitely can be done and I've seen it be done, but I think it's much more realistic long-term. And something that you can then turn into a lifestyle rather than just a quote unquote diet or, a something you're doing at this point in time. But I, you know, just one really does make a difference. And then you're also then introducing that whole commonality of that food. So like Sarah was saying, you know, just finding what you like to do with that one fruit or vegetable, or just introducing one new time, really makes a huge difference. And again, then it becomes a staple as a side dish at dinner, or, you know, it's now a new family meal. So I think it's something that, you know, really can have a huge benefit in the long run, but it definitely takes those baby steps just to get started.
And I think there's real science to support that too. There was a meta-analysis that was done in 2014 that looked at just adding one additional fruits or vegetables, and they saw a 5% reduction in overall mortality associated with that. So we know just those simple steps can make a difference. And you hear that a lot of times, but I think in this conversation, we also want to show that it's supported through scientific literature.
I think that's important too, because I think another challenge people probably face is time, and whether that's meal planning, or actually the cooking of the food or the buying of the food. I think time is a huge thing for people, especially if they're not culinarily, if that's a word, inclined, you know, because a lot of people find like joy in cooking or things like that. But for some people, it's just not something they're interested in spending their time on. And so it might be more of a chore for them than it might be for others. But if you see your meals and you see your planning as more than just, I need food to live, I'm hungry, I'm going to eat, if you see it as medicine, or if you see it as an investment in your health, then maybe it's, you know, you're more inclined to spend more time, even if it does feel like a chore, if you really believe in, you know, like you said, Sarah, the research supports this, that by doing this, you're not just living a healthy life or losing 5 pounds, but you're really setting yourself up for a more healthy future, and probably doing the same for your family who's, you know, eating those things with you.
I also think we do get caught up that it does take a lot of time, but then kind of once you get into the groove, it doesn't really. Like, I found this new recipe that I love because it's super simple and you can modify it with whatever vegetable I get. And it's like, take the vegetables, put them on a sheet pan, add some feta cheese and a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, and then you roast them, and then they taste wonderful. And that could be from broccoli to summer squash to tomatoes to whatever kind of comes in my CSA basket that time of year. And it's simple, because I do think sometimes, like to your point, Kara, people get so caught up in like this idea that I'm not a good cook. I think, you know, in the end, most people can be. It's like finding what you can do. Can you boil water, and can you put vegetables on a pan and set a timer?
I'm going to have to laugh because we just watched Ratatouille with my son last night. And the quote is like, everyone can cook. I mean, everybody can cook to that point. And, you know, I think you made a huge point, because recipes, I always find so limiting. But like you said, you know, it is really just a suggestion. Whatever you have in your pantry can work. There are so many substitutes out there. Everybody has a different flavor profile preference. So it's really all about experimenting in your kitchen and just figuring out what works best and what you like best, because it shouldn't be a chore. We should enjoy it. You know, we should kind of get to that point. But we know that obviously cooking at home and preparing our own meals is going to be time and time again healthier than doing takeout or picking up anything at a drive-through. So when you see that reward and the longevity that it can create for you, it is a pretty good trade-off, but it does take some steps to get there. So.
And I also think the concept of eating and cooking in our collective history as humans is so important, because it's bringing you together. And yes, food is medicine, but there's also the sense of like being social, spending time together. There's studies showing that children who eat meals with their families have better mental health. They also have better weight management. And so as a parent, we try to eat at least, you know, most meals in the evening together, right? There's sports and other things that get in the way, but if you could do it 3-4 times a week, it really does make a difference, and you get to understand what's going on with your kid. You have that time to just kind of calm down, and creating together also gives you this sense of accomplishment as a family.
So what I'm hearing from our conversation is that there's no one solution for every person or every family, that there's an aspect of trial and error that is involved in finding what works for you realistically, practically, and also what works for you as far as taste and recipes and food combinations. So that brings me to my next question. I wanted to ask what you thought, what the difference is or what your preference is for recommending a, and I'm putting air quotes here, a diet for someone versus maybe a more vague recommendation of eat three colors a day or eat three servings of fruit and vegetables each per day. How do you approach that difference and why do you think it's significant?
Well, I think diet indicates a specific period of time, and you want people to do things that they can do for their life. There's certain conditions that people have that they need a very therapeutic diet. If you have celiacs or you can't manage oxalates or you have epilepsy, and so maybe the keto diet is more appropriate for you. You know, so there are those people who need those specific diets. But in general, the idea of a diet feels restrictive to people, and finding ways to change your life on an everyday that you live, that you don't just stop, I think is key. So I would suggest to people, look at your overall, what you like to eat, and then how much you actually need. Because a lot of times, you know, like we can tend to overeat if we are adding things that are heavily processed. So I would say try to eat as whole foods as possible. Eat a variety of fruits and vegetables. If you're somebody who eats meat, try to eat lean meats and make them as more of an aside versus the opposite way. You know, a lot of times we think of sides as the vegetables, but meat should really kind of be your aside for a lot of times. But it's important to have protein, and especially those who are either physically active or you're aging, it really becomes key. And do things that you can do for a lifetime. Small changes can make a huge difference.
Diet always seems to have a negative connotation at the end of the day. And that, you know, diet is, yes, what we're eating and whatnot, but it is, it's insinuating that it is a short term. It's a length of time. And, you know, we hear these things like keto diet and, you know, Mediterranean diet, and everybody has a preference of a diet, I guess, but it also seems super limiting. So, you know, as Sarah mentioned, all those wonderful like recommendations of generality, and you can kind of fit in with where you see yourself best living. That's the main takeaway. It's how do you figure out how to make it work for your lifestyle? Because we live in this world of convenience and fast paced, and we always want something quick. But typically, if you're out to eat or if you're at the grocery store, it's not listing all of the ingredients as keto or a specific type of diet there for you to, you know, learn about. So you really just have to look at food as a whole. And I think that's something that, you know, we have a long ways to go as a society to overcoming and learning. But it's something that I think we're on the right track for, because this is a common conversation we're having each and every day.
So on that note, of kind of reflecting on all the things that we've talked about today, what are the main factors that you think will affect how successful an individual is at making a sustainable, a long-term change in their diet and other lifestyle habits too?
Motivation. I think majority of the time, no, I won't say majority, but a significant amount of times, people have some type of health event that puts them on the brink of having to make some type of change. Well, that could be being prescribed a medication, that could be some type of heart condition or whatnot. But I think oftentimes doctors say you need to do something about your nutrition, and they leave it at that. And that's pretty much, they're just kind of left to figuring out maybe how to take that course, or having kind of this aha moment for themselves. But it is like this internal motivation factor that has to be there. Not too many people like to be told what to do, right? So we have to have this some type of underlying desire to really want to, you know, learn and create and kind of take nutrition as a whole into our homes and into our daily lifestyles. At least I know that's definitely one of the contributing factors that I see.
I think habit becomes mm-hmm. part of it too. So you have to create a habit and be held accountable. I think mm-hmm. like omega-3s as an example, you know, we don't eat enough fish. I live in Wisconsin, so I don't have as much access as probably I wish. And so I've made a habit of making sure that my son and husband and my dogs take omega-3s every day. And it's just the first thing that we do. We put out our, you know, the supplements that they're taking, and everybody gets that every day. And now I don't get the complaint that, oh, I don't like it. You know, like my son will love that that's his voice on a podcast, but you know what I mean? So if you can start the habit and hold people accountable to having somebody who holds you accountable, if you need to change those habits, it's just, you know, really behavioral change, modification, science.
I think the great thing too is that I would imagine for most people that once they start making changes, even if they're getting to a point where they're starting to lose motivation, they might be remotivated by the kind of the feedback that their body gives them, you know, whether that's improved digestion or mental health or just like general energy and like better sleep. I think a lot of times people really, really underestimate or don't give credit to the effect on the body that food has. You know, it's more than just sustenance. It's affecting all these different systems of our body, and it can really surprise you, I think. And that can often re-energize you if you've been trying to make a sustainable change for 6 weeks and you're tired of eating certain things. So yeah, I think that's really powerful, kind of seeing for yourself the power that food can have on how it makes you feel.
You know, the one thing that I talk to practitioners a lot about is doing some sort of evaluation before and after you do a program, because it's hard for somebody to say, well, how did I feel 12 weeks ago? But if they list it and they take a survey or they fill out a questionnaire or they have lab tests, then 12 weeks from now, it seems, oh, maybe I still feel like not 100%, but I probably feel a lot better, but I don't remember how I felt 12 weeks ago. So I think that's a really important thing is tracking too.
And I think not only just tracking too, but then realizing what your backup plan is for, you know, when they fall off the wagon, because, you know, they might notice they feel the difference, but then it turns into, well, I'm traveling or I have this event or I have, you know, every excuse under the sun. So noting how they feel and kind of getting back to what their regular game plan is shouldn't be considered a setback, but it should be considered, you know, something that they just have to overcome and have to figure out how to get back on the train and how do they feel best. Like that trial and error again keeps coming into play. It's something that you just kind of learn from. So I think that's also equally important.
So we've talked a lot about how people can make changes in their lives to include more fruits and vegetables, which is something we see time and time again in research to improve all around health and a lot of health factors. And, you know, we talked about taste and we talked about preference and practical applications in cooking. And when we talked to Christine Mason about farming, we talked about nutrients in the soil and how that may change because of modern day farming practices over the years. So all of that together, there are certainly some cases where someone could have a high level healthy lifestyle and still somehow not get enough nutrients. Can you talk a little bit about how nutrient supplements can help with that deficit?
Yeah. So I'll start off with just kind of covering those public health nutrients of concern, because that's a huge point, Kara. We know by and large, you know, vitamin D, fiber, calcium, potassium, and iron are the top five shortfalls with public health nutrient concern that we are just deficient in as a society. So no matter what we are eating, you know, even if we are eating the best of daily fruits and vegetables, we're still coming up short sometimes. And that does attribute to, you know, how it was grown or perhaps just the variety that you have available based on, you know, where you live. So I think, you know, at that point in time, you know, working with your healthcare practitioner and supplementation are the ways to consider filling those gaps. And I think that's something that helps people then utilize their body's best potential by doing so. I know personally, I always would love to know exactly which nutrients are deficient. So that way you can really pinpoint and really understand what vitamin D does for the body or what, you know, calcium can do when you feel like at your best. So I think that's extremely important to consider, because it is something that's, for a practicality purpose, something that needs to be addressed.
like magnesium is something that also sticks out to me significantly. And people probably don't have frank deficiencies, but they have these suboptimal levels. And really, to your point, Kara, about what Christina talked about in the soil, is that the amount of magnesium that's in plants is significantly different than what it was 20, 30, 50 years ago. And so we also then see that there's these effects that's happening, even if it's not a frank deficiency that you have. If you don't have enough magnesium, there's ties with glucose management, there's ties with cardiovascular concerns. And so I think magnesium is one of those things that everybody needs to find a way to incorporate. One of the other ones that I am super passionate about, I've already talked about omega-3s, but I think most people we know are not getting the level of omega-3s that they need. People don't eat as much fish, and it's hard then to supplement that. And we know that omega-3s have such a key role in our inflammatory response and making sure that we are able to resolve. And so if we don't have enough omega-3s on board, our bodies don't work the right way. Megan talked about vitamin D, and we're getting now into the fall, and so we're all probably less vitamin D than we need. So I think there's a lot of opportunities to eat a healthy diet, but then have the right supplements that you're probably not going to get through your diet, and making sure then you're doing those both in combination.
So I think that we know that not all supplements are created equal, and there's also a ton of choices out there, and not everyone can be their own nutritionist, and not everyone maybe has access to a nutritionist or a practitioner with ample nutrition expertise. So what are some general things that someone looking to supplement a healthy diet with quality products, what kinds of things can they look for to know that they're purchasing and investing in something that's high quality?
So I think, first of all, it's important to utilize a practitioner and have them guide you. Having that access to somebody to help you through your journey is really important, because it's hard for an individual who's not an expert. And even, you know, when you have nutrition, like Meg and I are both nutritionists, sometimes you don't see the things that a practitioner who is working with you could. So I think that's really important to start with. Quality is key. You know, there's a lot of fly-by-night companies out there. And so well-established companies that are doing good GMP is important. You know, they're really focusing on quality through every step, from the things that come into their facility to what goes out. Brandon and Weston and all of us had a conversation about the whole food matrix and how having that in a supplement is really key, because it improves bioavailability and bioaccessibility. So if you think of something like turmeric as an example, we could eat the spiced turmeric all day long, but we might not be able to absorb it. And so having a product that is well studied, that helps you to know that you're going to get that bioavailability. And then understanding that, you know, where possible, where they're using ingredients that come from an organic source, because, you know, we don't, like, as an example, if we're doing detox, we don't want to do a detox where we're maybe potentially adding additional toxins into our system. So I think, you know, those kind of key things, utilize your practitioner, look for high quality sources that use good GMPs with a long history. Think about things that have whole food matrix, and bioavailability is really key.
Well, I think that's a great way to segue into the next part of this episode, where we'll be talking with Dave Hogsett, a practitioner, about how a patient's practitioner can be involved in their efforts to change their diet and lifestyle to improve their health. So Sarah and Megan, I really appreciate giving us your insights today. And I hope that if this is the first episode you're listening to, that you'll take time to go back and listen to episodes 1 through 5 that are available on our channel. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, Megan, and Kara, for absolutely convicting me about how little colorful fruits and vegetables I'm getting in my own diet. Hi, Dave Hogsett here, and I needed that podcast for sure. But I love how they kept emphasizing the point that just one small, simple change at a time in your diet can be so powerful, and not to try to be perfect overnight. It's so easy for us to get overwhelmed about all these great superfoods we can add into our diet, and it's especially easy for us to overwhelm our patients with that. And it's also easy for us to get in an all or nothing mindset with our diet. We can get in ruts of thinking, I'm going all in on being bad right now, especially as I'm recording this during the holidays. We think I'm eating a lot of junk, so there's no point in even trying. Or after January 2nd, you know, after the holidays, we can have the I'm going to be perfect now mindset with our diet. And you've probably noticed that neither of these mindsets work very well. And Sarah brought home the power of just how one small, simple change at a time can be so effective when she mentioned the 2014 meta-analysis that found that adding just one additional fruit or vegetable in your diet can result in a 5% decrease in mortality rates. That's a big deal. So as I was listening to that, I was thinking my baby step that I have no excuse for not incorporating and changing in my diet is eating more cruciferous vegetables, more frequently. And everyone can benefit from that. And everyone can find at least one cruciferous vegetable that they enjoy eating. Broccoli, Brussels sprouts, kale, cabbage, and one of the easiest, cauliflower. Cruciferous vegetables are one of the best simple changes to start with because they directly address one of the biggest health burdens that we struggle with, and that's toxin overload. All the toxins we're exposed to, it's the cruciferous vegetables that are unique in containing those glucosinolates and other compounds that support phase two liver detoxification and dramatically increase our protective antioxidants. So there's a lot of great green vegetables out there, and the more you can incorporate, the better. But if you want a simple place to start, add cruciferous vegetables to get more green, to get more detoxification support, and of course, such an easy way to get more fiber. You know, one reason we want to encourage our patients and ourselves to add as many of these simple superfoods into the diet as we possibly can is that there are already quite a few nutrients that are really difficult to get enough of, no matter how well we're eating, no matter how hard we're trying. Sarah mentioned a supplement that is very hard to get enough of in the diet, no matter how well you're trying to eat, and that is omega-3 fatty acids. Even for people that say they eat fish and they don't think they need a fish oil supplement, it's probably not very frequently that they eat fish. They probably eat mostly farm-raised fish that has significantly less omega-3 concentrations. And they probably cook the fish with high heat temperatures, which can denature those omega-3 fatty acids, especially the DHA and the EPA. So this is why almost everyone can benefit from an omega-3 fish oil supplement. Vitamin D is another example. For a variety of reasons, most people can benefit from a vitamin D supplement, again, no matter how well they're eating. And there are other examples of those kind of nutritional supplements that are almost universally needed. So my point is that there are enough nutrients we need to supplement to begin with. So any simple foods that we can incorporate to minimize our supplement needs is going to make things so much easier for our health and especially to get our patients well. And it was mentioned that some people just don't get a lot of joy from preparing these superfoods and taking the time to prepare them. And that's definitely me. You know, I fall into that fast Chipotle line, salad bowl, of course. And like a lot of other people out there, it's not that I don't like the taste of these vegetables. It's the rut I fall into of, you know, just not wanting to prepare them, not planning ahead with shopping to do that. But Sarah took away all of my excuses when she was speaking directly to me through the podcast and said, can you boil water? Can you put vegetables in a pan and set a timer? And I think even I'm capable of doing that. So I'm going to make those small step changes. But I also travel for speaking engagements a lot. And so there's many times that even if I was motivated to get those superfoods into my diet, I wouldn't be able to do it. And that's why I'm so grateful for concentrated whole food supplements that I can fill in the dietary gaps, especially with my traveling lifestyle. So I always make sure to take some supplements that contain these critical cruciferous vegetables like Brussels sprouts, kale, or as I mentioned in a previous podcast, I love Spanish black radish because it supports both detoxification and digestive tract health. And with that same topic of simple changes, sometimes we can also get really overwhelmed by all the things we need to reduce or eliminate from the diet for optimal health. There are so many things we can benefit from avoiding out there, like non-organic foods with those pesticides, genetically modified foods, all the toxins in water like chlorine and fluoride, too many omega-6 vegetable oils, lectins, oxalate, etc., etc. We could go on and on. We can overwhelm and scare off a patient really easily by loading them up with a list of things they should be avoiding if they want optimal health. And these are all important things to be aware of. But just like we should focus on adding in a beneficial food one at a time, we can all start by removing the simple things that can make a big difference one at a time. And that one simple big thing for most people to start with that can make a huge difference in their health is, of course, getting the sugar out, especially in sweet drinks like soda, fruit juice, sweet tea. You can rack up a huge intake of sugar in those beverages very quickly. And then when you've conquered those beverages, you can go after other sugars, other white flour, excessive refined carbohydrates. And then you can tackle the organic issue, get a water filter, and there's plenty of other things to keep us busy for what we should be avoiding. But start simple. And again, start with the sugar for most people. That's where most people will feel the biggest impact in their health if they can get it under control. And it's so important when you're recommending supplements to a patient that they understand the more superfoods they can incorporate at their own pace and the more junk food they can remove at their own pace, the less supplements they will probably need. But if they just can't stand the taste of a food, or if they're like me and they're just too lazy to prepare it sometimes, they'll need to have a whole food supplement to fill in those dietary gaps. So for this to work, your patients first really need to know the importance of all these colors and phytonutrients. And again, that's what the Holistic Matters website is so effective at educating our patients about. And then they'll need to make the take it or eat it choice when they know the value of those foods. They can either eat the food or take it as a whole food supplement. Take it or eat it. And when the choice is put to them that way, it really helps them understand the value of whole food nutritional supplements at a much deeper level. So just a recap of some of those really important take it or eat it foods that are so critical for optimal health in today's world to either eat, which is preferable, or take as a supplement. Beets, to get so many of those red, unique phytonutrients. And the beet leaf is one of the best leafy green vegetables. Turmeric, our ultimate yellow protector, definitely take it or eat it. Carrots for our carotenoids, cruciferous vegetables for detoxification support, and buckwheat for those very unique root and cardiovascular and metabolic benefits. And most people definitely choose to supplement that one. And when those foods are grown on the optimal soil conditions that you heard Christine Mason mention in the previous podcast, the possibilities of what you can accomplish with those superfoods are pretty amazing. Hope you enjoyed this series, and thank you once again to Megan, Sarah, and Kara for putting this together, and we'll see you next time.
I think this was a great way to end this season of the Holistic Matters podcast series. If this is your first time tuning into the show, definitely check out our other programs on topics like medicinal herbs, the holistic approach of veterinary care, what it means to be healthy, and so much more. Plus, we have a brand new special monthly series called Nutrition Education and Racial Disparities in Health. We'll be hearing new perspectives every month, and I hope you'll tune in. That's all for now, and thanks for listening to Holistic Matters.